Hi, folks. This is Bob Main. Welcome to another episode of today's Survival Show. Episode number 166, to be exact. This is a practical show. I talk about doing what you can with what you have, wherever you are. And I promise I won't go tinfoil hat on you. I like to just keep this rooted in common sense. Thanks for tuning in. I want to talk in this episode a little bit about self-defense. Now, recently, I was contacted by a listener, and his name is Joseph Morris. He's got an excellent website that I'm going to talk about in a minute, but he asked if he could do a guest post for me. In other words, he wanted to write something and put it on my website at todayssurvival.com. And when I found out what he wanted to talk about, I said, sure, that would be great. So the topic of his article is pros and cons of the three most popular non-lethal defense weapons. Now, I want to say he's got an excellent website, and it's called buypepperspraytoday.com. There's some dashes in the address, the web address, so go to todayssurvival.com, and there's a clickable link, and you can click that, and you can check out his website. But it's a very informative article, and I want to share it with you. Now, I'm not just going to read the article. I'm going to give it a little bit of my own flavor. I know some of you don't always look at the website, so I wanted to make a podcast out of this. I did post this on the forum. By the way, if you're not a member of our forum, I believe networking is one of the most important things you can do to be a good prepper and a good survivalist. And again, we don't go extreme. I like to keep my forum basically full of a lot of good common sense survival techniques and preparedness ideas. That's what you'll find. Become a member of our forum. It's free. You have to let me know. Please do me a favor. If you would please send me an email and let me know that you signed up for the forum, that'll help me keep spammers out. I'll know which accounts to approve and what not to approve. You can email me at bob@todayssurvival.com. Again, there's two S's in that, so I'll repeat it, bob@todayssurvival.com, or just go to the website and click the contact page. But join our forum, and I put a post about this article on the forum. But let me talk about this, and let me kind of throw some of my own material into this from a self-defense standpoint. But it's about non-lethal self-defense. So I'm not going to talk about guns. I'm going to talk about non-lethal self-defense weapons. And again, thanks, Joseph Morris, for writing this. It's very, very good. One of the things that he starts off with that I like is he said that life today should be safe. And even though it's not, it should be. I've mentioned this before. I think you're kind of naive if you think that you can walk around blissfully thinking that, oh, nothing's ever going to happen to me. It just simply couldn't happen to me. A lot of people have that false sense of security. Oh, it's not going to happen to me. That, you know, those things happen in bad areas. Please don't think that way. You know, there's all kinds of stuff that happens in good areas. Bad things happen to good people, and it doesn't matter what area you're in, and what if you're traveling. Sometimes if you're traveling, you don't have complete control over what area you happen to be passing through. Okay, I travel a lot, and sometimes I can't control where I have to go through. Sometimes I don't know the area that well, and I could be going through a bad area. I might have to get out of my car and go into a store or go into a place of business or go into a restaurant or get gas or something to where I might not always be in a safe area. So in regard to personal safety, if you're just walking down the street or whether you're going through some area like I just talked about or you're out in the backwoods hiking in the countryside or whatever it is, there's an old adage called better safe than sorry. And I think you're really doing yourself a huge disservice if you neglect this part of your preparedness. Now, Joseph writes, there's a lot of different self-defense weapons that you can choose from. Non-lethal self-defense. And anywhere from items that can disable an attacker from the force of their impact or, you know, just basically making a person stop what they're doing. So you should be aware of some of the pros and cons of some non-lethal self-defense weapons out there. And that's what I want to talk about here a little bit. And the first thing that Joseph talks about is stun guns. Now, some people don't know what a stun gun is. Before I did this podcast, I had a chance to talk to a couple of family members of mine. And some of them listen to my show, and some of them just think that, you know, I'm just one of these strange people into survival. You know, sometimes you just can't convince your family, folks. You just can't. Matter of fact, sometimes your family are some of the hardest people to convince that preparedness should be a way of life. We're not extremists. You know, we're common sense people. At least I label myself as a common sense person that wants to be ready in case something happens. I mean, what's the extreme part of that? But sometimes family members are just that way. And I get a lot of emails from people saying, how do I convince my family to become more of a prepper? And I write back sometimes and I say, I hate to tell you this, but sometimes you can't. So some will, some won't. So what? Next. That should be your attitude. Just move on. Move on to somebody else, even if it's a good friend or somebody that you meet just in your everyday life or everyday business or something like that. You know, you need to build a network, but sometimes they're going to think that you're extremists, and I'm sorry about that. But when I was talking to my family, I asked them if they knew what a stun gun was. And those who listened to me, they say that they did know what a stun gun was, and they were able to describe it pretty well because they've heard me talk about it before on this show. But again, some of them don't listen to my podcast or jump on the forum, so they didn't know. So Joseph does a really good job here of defining what a stun gun is. He says the term stun gun refers to an electroshock weapon, a small incapacitant device that renders an attacker ineffectual, basically by inflicting pain and temporary disruption of muscle function. Okay, I'll say that again. A stun gun refers to an electroshock weapon, and basically what it does is it renders an attacker ineffective, basically through pain and disruption of muscle function. And the way they do that is they deliver a pretty powerful electrical shock. Now, stun guns might resemble small handheld real guns. You know, they might take the form of a baton or a belt or some kind of an electrically charged projectile, but sometimes they just look like small handheld guns. Now, there's some pros and cons that Joseph talks about. The first thing he says is, let's cover the pros first of stun guns. They are a means of incapacitation. And although stun guns inflict pain, their primary intended means of incapacitating an attacker is through a stunning effect, a temporary paralysis of muscle function. What is that going to do? The pro is it's likely to shock the person enough that they're going to stop what they're doing. That's pretty, again, these are non-lethal defense weapons. So we're talking about weapons that are likely not to kill your attacker, but make them stop. I know some of you listen to this show. You listen to me from a different country. I'm in the U.S. I'm in San Antonio, Texas, to be exact. Some of you live in a different country where you're not allowed to own guns, or it's very difficult. And some of you listen to me within the USA, where you're not easily able to own real firearms. It's a shame. It's not what our founding fathers want, but that's a whole nother discussion for another day. The other pro of a stun gun is cost. They're usually not very expensive, typically under about $50. So they're affordable for almost anybody to own and carry. Now, I want to say something here I should have said earlier when I opened up the show, but I'll go ahead and I'll say it now. It's your responsibility to know your local laws. Not all of these non-lethal self-defense weapons might be legal in your area. Please do your research and make sure that they are legal. In most areas, these are going to be legal, but I can't say that for sure in all areas that they will be. But cost, they're definitely easy to obtain, easy to buy, and they don't cost much money. The other advantage of a stun gun is the size and the discretion. Now, they typically have a very small profile, so you can keep them hidden well. In your purse or backpack or pocket or the palm of your hand. Now, I'm not a real big fan of purse carry for ladies. Now, obviously, you know, if you're a lady listening to this, you might be saying, well, how do you know, Bob? Right? You're a guy. You don't carry a purse. Well, okay, I'll give you that. I don't carry a purse. However, I've seen a lot of women struggle with getting things out of their purse quickly. You have to understand that a self-defense weapon needs to be something you can deploy quickly and fast. Violence happens in a matter of mere split seconds. It's not something you're typically going to have a lot of time. You know, think about it. Your attacker is going to have the element of surprise in his favor. You are going to be in a reactionary mode. You're not going to have the advantage of time. So it's got to be something you can get out quickly. And I've just seen too many ladies struggle too much. No offense, ladies. I don't mean any offense by this at all, but I've seen too many of you struggle trying to get things out of your purse quickly. Try to put these non-lethal defense weapons into, carry them in ways where you can access them quickly. So in a backpack or a purse might not be the quickest. There's an old saying that the fastest draw is with something already in your hand. What you have in your hand, you're going to be the fastest with. What you already have in your hand at the time. And we're going to get into weapons that can be disguised as pens, which are easy to get out of a pocket, and disguised as different things. But with a stun gun, their small size usually means that they're very light, and so they can be carried a lot of different ways. And stun guns can be housed in casing that resembles a lot of innocuous devices, like a cell phone, or a pen, or a flashlight. So you might want to check into stun gun. Now here's some of the disadvantages, some of the cons of something carrying something like a stun gun. You probably already figured out, well, geez, Bob, you know what? Their range isn't very good. I mean, your attacker practically has to be on top of you or within arm's reach. And that's true. That's the primary drawback of a stun gun. Now, with the exception of tasers or taser-branded products, which fires a probe that embeds itself into an attacker's skin, usually on flexible wires. With the exception of tasers, stun guns typically only operate at arm's length. Okay, you have to be able to close enough to your attacker to touch them. Well, you know, when I was reading that part of Joe's article, I thought, that's a big negative of a stun gun. I mean, yes, is it better than having nothing? Sure. But if an attacker is already close enough to you, to where he can touch you, he can do a heck of a lot of damage, folks. So one of the keys is learning other types of situational awareness to be able to keep your distance. Okay? Or if he's that close to you, you need to have some hand-to-hand combat techniques. You need to learn some martial arts techniques to where you can create some space and distance and learn how to get away from an attacker and create space. Space is your friend if you're attacked. The other negative of a stun gun, I was kind of alluding to already, your chance of being overpowered. Think about this. If your attacker has a more powerful weapon with a longer reach or longer arms, or if they're bigger than you are, way more, the possibility exists that you as the victim could get overpowered if you're relying only on a stun gun. Now, the next thing here that Joseph Morris wrote, and by the way, you got to check out his website. His website is www.buy-pepper-spray-today.com. Might be hard for you to remember, so here's what you can remember. Go to todayssurvival.com. You'll see an article. The article is called Pros and Cons of the Three Most Popular Non-Lethal Self-Defense Weapons. At the bottom of that article, you'll see a clickable link to his website. Click on that link and you'll see what I'm talking about. Also, if you're a member of the forum, I started a thread on this on our forum at Today's Survival Show. Please, again, remember to send me an email if you signed up for the forum and let me know. Now, another negative of stun guns is battery life. Stun guns, because of their electronic circuitry, they can take the relatively low voltage of one or two batteries and they can multiply it by many times. They can increase that voltage. So it means that they're going to chew up batteries. They're probably going to chew up batteries worse than an iPhone 4, folks. So you better be ready to... You know, I got a new iPhone on order, and I'm looking forward to it, but I've heard nothing but, well, I shouldn't say nothing, but I've heard a lot of bad things about the battery life. Although I've heard that Apple's coming out with a software fix for that. I hope that they do. I love the iPhone, great stuff, but their batteries are just not known for lasting. So is the same case with stun guns. So you've got to be able to carry extra batteries or have access to extra batteries. All right, but there's some information on stun guns that might be one option for you. You might want to think about it. It is a non-lethal self-defense weapon that could be useful for you. The next is pepper spray. Now, pepper spray is a chemical agent that severely irritates the eyes. I've never been able to pronounce this right, but I think capsicum is the name of the chemical agent. It comes from the capsicum family of plants. Members of the nightshade family, which includes hot peppers. So the primary compound in pepper spray, when it's concentrated and pressurized, it makes pepper spray a very effective, non-lethal self-defense weapon. So what are some of the advantages? And, you know, pepper spray is very popular. Very popular. I know people who are in the firearms industry, and I know firearms trainers, and I know people who are very much into self-defense with a firearm. If they are going to an area where they are forbidden to conceal carry, many people will pack pepper spray. So, let's talk about some of the pros and the cons of pepper spray. Again, portability. Pepper spray comes in a lot of different shapes and sizes. And typically, they're very small. And again, they're easy to carry. Pepper spray is very easy to carry. You can carry it in a bag or a pocket. You can keep it handheld if you're traveling in a high-risk area. It's pretty easy to disguise pepper spray. It's also very versatile. Pepper spray can come disguised as lipstick or pens or walking weights. So there's a lot of disguises for it. And what is that? Here's the advantage of pepper spray coming in a disguised container. It's easy. Remember earlier I said the fastest draw is what's already in your hand? You can be, if you're going through a high-risk area, you can carry what looks like a pen. Or you, ladies, you can carry what looks like lipstick, and it's pepper spray. So in a moment's notice, you can use it. Okay? I mean, some pepper spray even comes with a holster. So you can pretty much, you know, deploy it very rapidly like a firearm. It has better range than a stun gun. Pepper spray is typically pretty effective from about 8 feet up to sometimes as much as 20 feet, depending on which way the wind is blowing. Okay? And wind is a negative of pepper spray, and I'm going to get to that in a minute. But 8 to 20 feet is better than stun guns. Now, this can sometimes buy you the time to get out of harm's way and the ability to escape. You know, let me just kind of stop here and interject something. Some of you know that I do another podcast called The Handgun World Show, and I talk about guns. And that's all I do is talk about firearms over there. It's a pretty cool show, and I have fun. But I realize that from a survival and a common sense preparedness perspective, sometimes the ideal thing is not to shoot somebody. Sometimes the ideal thing is just to be able to get away. And sometimes you have to buy yourself some time. I know that retreating doesn't sound like a manly thing or it doesn't sound like a macho thing. But you know what? Guys, if you're listening to this, put your ego aside. Sometimes the smartest and best thing to do is get out of there. Get you and your family out of the situation. Do not be there anymore. There's more nobility in being able to get out of the way and not be charged with a crime. Sometimes shooting, well, actually, all the time, shooting should only be a last resort. I am prepared to shoot somebody if I'm carrying a gun, for example, in an area where I'm legally allowed to carry a gun. If I've tried everything else to get myself out of that deadly situation and nothing else works, I will shoot. But I'm going to try everything else first. And pepper spray could buy you enough time. It could be just enough you need to get away, simply because you have the ability to reach a farther distance with pepper spray. Another advantage of it is affordability. Again, it's not very expensive. And there's even police-grade pepper sprays that can sometimes be found for under $30 or $40. So it's not very expensive. Now, what are the disadvantages? Well, I mentioned one of them earlier. It can be affected by the wind. Okay, if it's a windy day, you're outside, especially if the wind's blowing towards you, the victim, or if it's blowing from left to right, the pepper spray's effective range and accuracy can be severely diminished. So that range of 8 to 20 feet, it can be thrown off quite greatly by the wind. So that's a negative that you need to think about. Also, locking mechanisms. Pepper spray might include a locking mechanism, which is very much like the safety on a gun. Now, I've said many times I hate guns with safeties. If I'm going to depend on something to save my life and split seconds count, I don't want a safety. I don't want to leave much to error, folks. If this is life-saving equipment, I don't want to leave much to chance. Make sense? This is why I don't like guns with safeties. I know I might get disagreements on that. I understand. I'm just not taking that chance, folks. So the same thing with pepper spray. If it's got a safety device, I think that can be a huge negative. Oftentimes we panic during attack. I don't care how much you've trained. I don't care how much you think you've got this down. I'm sorry, folks. Something happens to the mind. Minds turn to mush when they're in a violent situation. They just do. It's been proven over and over and over again. FBI studies, police accounts of what has happened. I mean, there's been police that have been involved in a shooting. And when the police were questioned after the shooting, the cop said, hey, I only fired two or three shots. And it was found out later he emptied the magazine of his gun. But he thought he only fired two or three rounds. The mind goes to mush in a violent attack. So panicking during an attack without having adequately practiced how to depress a safety mechanism to discharge the pepper spray can sometimes leave you more vulnerable. And that's not a good thing. So, you know, if you're going to carry something with a safety, by all means, I don't care if it's a gun, pepper spray, whatever it happens to be, please practice, 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 practice. And again, try to avoid, just my personal opinion, folks, you're free to disagree. If you have a good reason for disagreeing, I love it. I'm an open-minded guy. I'm always looking for ways to improve this show. If you want to get on the forum and take me to task, or if you want to put a comment on the website at todayssurvival.com as to why safeties are a good thing, I'm open-minded and I'd like to hear it. Send it on over. I'm just not a huge believer in them, okay? The other negative of pepper spray is the risk of an explosion. Some highly pressurized aerosol pepper sprays carry a slight risk, even though it's slight, there's a slight risk of explosion when exposed to high levels of heat or direct sunlight for prolonged periods of time. Remember, these are pressurized products. So there's a little bit that Joseph Morris wrote about a pepper spray. Some good pros and cons. A couple things there you might want to think of and take into account if you're going to carry pepper spray. It could be a great alternative, though. And I'm investigating into carrying some of it anyway. I don't frequent a lot of places where I can't carry a firearm. Not a lot of places I go to, but there are some. And pepper spray might be an alternative. So I'll be checking into that shortly. Now, the next thing I want to talk about that's in Joseph's article, and it's great. And again, if you want to read the article, I'm not covering this whole thing word for word. I don't do that. If you want to read this whole article word for word, it's very good. Check it out at todayssurvival.com. But he also talks about the coup baton. Now, the coup baton is a close quarter device which requires direct and forceful contact with your attacker. So that means it's not prone to some of the limitations of stun guns or pepper spray, but it does require more training. Coup batons can be very effective. Alex Haddix from the Practical Defense podcast, which is one I highly suggest you listen to. As a matter of fact, as a follow-up to this podcast, if you're not subscribed to the Practical Defense podcast, Alex Haddix is out in California. He's a martial arts instructor, and he teaches a lot of practical self-defense ideas. He does a great podcast called the Practical Defense Podcast. Google it or search iTunes for Practical Defense Podcast. It's very good. He talks a lot about the coup baton, and he also offers training classes on how to use a coup baton. If you're in his area, if you're in Southern California, you might want to check out some of Alex's classes. Probably any good martial arts school or self-defense school can teach you the art of using a coup baton. All right? The coup baton is a small stick, typically about 5.5 inches long. And it's made of hard material, possibly molded plastic. And there are different variants of it. There are some variants made of metal. Some of them have little knobs or spikes on them. And it can be gripped to reinforce the fist while punching also. That's another thing to think about with a Kubaton. Or the Kubaton itself can be used to inflict direct hits on tender parts of the attacker's body, like joints or pressure points. And if you take classes in the art of self-defense, you're going to learn how to get pressure points and how to hit pressure points so that it causes a lot of pain to your attacker. And quite likely, he's going to be pretty motivated to stop what he's doing, okay? Now, some of the advantages of a Kubaton, again, very small. A lot of what I'm talking about here are pretty small devices, so they're easy to conceal. Okay? And since the Kubaton is really nothing more than a rod of hard material, it can also function like a keychain. And it can be crafted out of large, like a tactical pen, or it can be created out of any cylindrical object that's available. Okay, so its small size means it's lightweight, easily to be stored, and guess what? It'll probably pass through TSA, no problem. Now, something about non-lethal weapons. If you're going to use something like a Kubaton or a stun gun or a flashlight, which I'm going to get to, flashlights can be used as non-lethal self-defense weapons. I'm going to get to that. You can travel with a lot of these. Again, know the laws where you're traveling to, but I don't know if I would suggest carrying these in carry-on luggage. Flashlights you can carry in carry-on luggage. I've carried a lot of flashlights, even tactical defensive flashlights. I've carried them on airplanes in my carry-on bags and gone through TSA with no problem. Okay? I mean, I have a Surefire light that's got the little crenulated bezel on it, and I'm going to get to that. And, hey, it's just a flashlight, folks. It's very innocuous. It's just a flashlight. I do a lot of flying. I have not been stopped or questioned by TSA for having a defensive flashlight in my carry-on bag when I'm traveling. Okay, no reason why you couldn't carry a Kubaton in your carry-on bag as well. Another advantage of Kubatons is that they're reusable. So this type of a self-defense weapon requires no external inputs, doesn't require any batteries, no fluids, or doesn't need anything that needs to be replaced. And from a prepper standpoint, something that doesn't need batteries but can be used to inflict pain or harm on an attacker is a good thing. This is one of the reasons why I like flashlights with the sharp crenulated bezels on them. You can strike with that, and you can inflict a lot of pain. Again, they have to be close to you. You have to be arm's length away. But that will work even without batteries. Even if the light doesn't work, you still have a self-defense weapon with that flashlight. Knives are also. Now, knives are a lethal defense weapon, but they're not a firearm, and I'm going to get into that. I'm going to cover a little bit of that here in this podcast, but I'll save that for later. The other good thing about a Kubaton is that there are no moving parts or no electronics to fail. So they're pretty practical if you know how to use them. But again, they require training. I want to put that caveat out there. Kubatons require training. Now, what are some of the negatives of something like a Kubaton? Well, obviously, as I've mentioned, they're a close range weapon only. Now, because the Kubaton is a small tool, you're very limited by its size, and you're very limited by distance. So, again, it means the attacker has to be very close. And the other negative is training. You know, because you do have to know how to use one, because in order to be effective with something like that, you're going to have to spend some money, and you're going to have to get trained. Money and time. So, you know, to me, I think training is a positive, because I love training. Training's fun. But if you don't have the money or the time, then that's a negative. You know, anything I've talked about so far, pepper spray or stun guns, Kubatons, I still suggest that you, if nothing else, at least get a hold of some DVDs or videos on how to use these products and play them over and over and over again and practice in your own home by watching the videos. And, you know, be careful when you practice with these. Obviously, you don't want to use the pepper spray on a family member. That's not what I'm talking about. Don't practice on your family members, but Even if you can't get to a training class, watching videos would help, but it would really be helpful if you can get to a training class. There are very, very inexpensive training classes taught on self-defense. And it doesn't mean you have to sign up for a martial arts program. It doesn't mean you have to sign up for a contract or make a commitment to go several times a week for a couple of years. You know, sometimes you can take self-defense classes that are offered once a quarter. For example, I know a martial arts school in San Antonio that offers self-defense classes once a quarter. It's a weekend self-defense class, and I think it's under $100. So get yourself trained. Sometimes what you know is more important than the supplies you have. I've mentioned that many times anyway on this show, and I really believe that. Now, let's talk about a few things that Joseph wrote a little bit about in this article, but I want to expand on some other things as well. Let's talk about flashlights. First of all, a good flashlight, and I say a good one. I'm not talking about a cheap flashlight that you pay $9.99 for at a truck stop or a Walmart cheapie for $10 or $11. Those are a good basic light if you just need to see something real quickly in the dark. But I'm talking about something that's a defensive flashlight. The brightness of the flashlight has a lot to do with its effectiveness as a self-defense weapon. When it does work, when you do have fresh batteries and it's working, that light can blind somebody. And if you know how to use it, especially those that have a strobe light setting, a bright pulsating strobe light can disorient your attacker quite quickly and quite easily. And I don't know if anybody's ever shined a bright light in your face before, a really bright one. 60, 70 lumens or better. And again, I mentioned, I have a Surefire light, which is 80 lumens. And it's got a strobe light setting, and it's a great light. It's a marvelous light. And it was expensive. Okay? It was over $100, but it's well worth it. Because if you're going to get a good light, folks, get a good one that has a lot of good features on it. But they can effectively be used, just the light itself can be a good self-defense weapon. The crenulated bezel, which means it looks like it has teeth on the front of it. Where the light lamp is, it looks like it's got teeth. That's what a crenulated bezel is. Well, that can kind of be used like a Kubaton, can't it? And if you're trained, if you know what you're doing, because it's got some fairly sharp teeth, especially when you drive that into somebody's wrist or into somebody's forearm or into a pressure point or a pressure point on their neck or on the temple of their head or something like that, when you drive that in with a crenulated bezel, let me tell you what. It's going to hurt if you know what you're doing. And again, if you have the element of some surprise and you can surprise your attacker, there's a very good chance that he or she will leave you alone. So flashlights like that are easy to carry. They typically come with belt clips. They're usually pretty easy to carry in a pocket. Have it clipped on the inside of your pocket like a pocket knife. So you might want to think about that. A good old flashlight. And again, if you travel a lot, if you're like me, I haven't had any problem in several years going through TSA. Now, I want to talk about knives for a minute. Obviously, you can't put a knife in your carry-on luggage, but you can put it in your checked luggage. And I study the knife laws. And by the way, you might want to go to kniferights.org, kniferights.org, and study some of the knife laws. There's a big movement, folks. When I went to the Gun Rights Policy Conference in Chicago in September, I did that as part of an activity that I set up through my Handgun World show. I went to the Gun Rights Policy Conference, and one of the speakers was Doug Ritter. Doug Ritter is the president of kniferights.org. And Doug had something interesting to say. He said during that conference that knife rights is the second front in the attack on our Second Amendment rights. And I think he's so correct about that. It's the second front in the attack on our Second Amendment rights. I do want to talk a little bit about the Second Amendment. I'm not going to go into guns here, but the Second Amendment says we have the right to keep and bear arms. Well, a knife can be an arm. Any of the things I've talked about on this show can be considered arming yourself. A stun gun, pepper spray, Kubaton, flashlight, even a knife, you're armed. Okay? So the right to keep and bear arms covers not just guns, but everything I've talked about. You also have the right to carry a knife. Now, typically, you can carry a knife in more places than you can carry a gun. Now, wherever you can carry a gun, you can typically carry a knife. There are few exceptions, but typically now, but there are some states though that have limits on what kind of a knife you can carry. State of Texas, for example. Don't quote me on this, but I think there is a 4-inch blade law. I think in Texas it's either 3.5 or 4. I can't remember off the top of my head, and I don't have access to my computer right now as I'm doing this, so I can't look it up for you. But I believe in the state of Texas, you're only allowed to carry a blade a certain length as a defensive weapon. Now, you can own knives. You can own knives for, quote, utility purposes or hunting purposes or whatever, longer than the 4 inches. But carrying it around with you on the street, you've got that limitation. Some states you don't. Oklahoma, I believe, does not have a blade length law. Now, is a knife a non-lethal self-defense weapon? No, it's not. And since this podcast is mostly about non-lethal self-defense weapons, I understand that a knife may not fit into that category, but since this is my show, I also reserve the right to deviate slightly from the topic. Okay? So I want to talk a little bit here about knives. I am no knife expert, but get some training. Because in order to be effective with a knife, I really believe you need some training. And I think there's nothing worse than threatening your attacker with a knife and then not knowing how to use it. Now, you might be thinking a question, what about a folding knife? What about an ordinary folding pocket knife? There's differences of opinion. There are some people that will tell you that it's no good for self-defense, that you have to have a fixed blade or nothing but a fixed blade. I don't completely agree with that. Yes, a fixed blade is better, absolutely. And I know people who very effectively carry a fixed blade knife. Small fixed blade knives, even if they're only 3 inches long, if the blade is only 3 inches long, a small fixed blade knife carried in the right sheath, you can carry that self inside your, or that thing inside your waistband. And it's perfectly concealed. Okay? They're very easy to carry. There are even neck knives that you can carry that hang around your neck in a nice little sheath, and you can keep that under your shirt. And nobody's ever going to see you carrying that. And it's pretty easy to get that knife out if you have to. But I think you can also be very effective with a folding pocket knife. My latest purchase is a Benchmade Griptilian. Now, I practice over and over and over again with my Benchmade folding knife. It's not even an assisted opening knife, but I can get that out of my pocket. And with a flick of a wrist, and I can pull back on the locking handle. And man, I can open that. I can deploy that thing quickly. I mean, if you go onto my YouTube channel, you'll see where I was doing a review on the SOG Vulcan knife that I used to own. And I say used to own. It's a different story I'll tell you some other time as to why I don't own that. I'm kind of depressed about it. But this Benchmade knife flicks open so easily, I don't even need assisted opening. With practice, I can get this thing open quickly. But even knives with assisted opening are very quick. I mean, some of them are switchblade fast. Now, switchblades are illegal in most areas that I can think of. But in most areas, an assisted opening is not illegal. There are some questions about assisted opening knives. Some law enforcement officers don't like them. And some law enforcement officers will kind of bend the law a little bit. How about that, huh? Imagine that. Imagine that, a law enforcement officer bending the law. I'm not picking on cops. I love cops. Cops are great. And, you know, really, please, if you're a police officer listening to this, I am not picking on you. But let's all admit, there are some police officers that have an agenda and don't believe that ordinary citizens should be able to possess any kind of self-defense weapon that they want. And so they'll make it a stretch, and they'll call some assisted opening knives. They'll put them in the same class as a switchblade. I don't believe they should be, but they are. All they are is spring-loaded. It means you can open them fast. But if it's legal and practical to carry in your area, a pocket folding knife with an assisted opening mechanism can be a pretty quick weapon. And if you know how to get that out of your pocket quickly, and you know how to use it, if you've been trained, again, I'll say if you've been trained, they can be pretty useful. So I don't, again, personal opinion here, I don't completely buy into the fact that simple folding knives, pocket knives, are no good for defense. But they are a lethal weapon, so they don't completely fall into the category of non-lethal self-defense weapons. Now, the other non-lethal self-defense weapon that Joseph Morris didn't write about that I want to write about, or talk about here, excuse me, is a pen. You'd be amazed how you can use a pen in self-defense. Again, you got to be trained, but there are good quality self-defense instructors that will teach you how to use nothing but an ink pen. Now, I don't like to use pens with plastic bodies. There are pens with aluminum bodies. I like to use those because my thinking is this. If I have to use this in self-defense, I'd rather have the stronger pen with an aluminum body. And it's going to hold up better. Okay? But, you know, think about it. I mean, a pen has a pointy end. And we were talking about pressure points. I discussed pressure points and using a Coubertin. You can use a pen as a Coubertin. As I mentioned, some Coubertins are disguised at pens, as pens. So are some pepper sprays disguised at pens. But even just an ordinary ink pen. One of the most innocuous items on the planet that can make it through any TSA security screening. And a pen is legal to carry anywhere. It can be used as an excellent self-defense weapon if you know what you're doing with it. So, that's pretty much all I wanted to cover in this show. Kind of a short show, pretty quick one. I wanted this to be short and sweet. I wanted to bring attention to Joseph Morris's excellent article. And again, go to todayssurvival.com. It's a blog post. So, if you're getting this podcast off your iTunes feeds, what I'm talking about is not going to show up in your iTunes feed. This podcast will, but Joseph's article is not. So check out his website, which is entitled buypepperspraytoday.com. Go to it. But this is a very well-written article. I want you to read it either at todayssurvival.com or on the forum at Today's Survival Show Forum, which you can also find a link to the forum on the main page. With that, I want to say thanks for listening to episode 166. My name is Bob Main. It's my goal to help you do what you can with what you have, wherever you are. Thanks for tuning in. I'll catch you next time. Goodbye.